Kids who would prefer to spend their time with other kids, we have arrangements in the next door room, and there's ample engagement for them. There are prizes to be won and games and everything that has been organized by a team of Mataji. So if you have kids that would better spend their time that way, please escort them to that room now. And also, if we could make sure that this area can be kept clear, because there are many more devotees who's going to come. And we would request that this area can be cleared. Perhaps that cameras can also be moved, if comfortable.
Can I go in the front?
So, with that said, I think Maharaj does not need an introduction. We'll move forward. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
ಚಕ್ಷುರುಣ್ಣೀಕುಂಡೀನ ಅಸ್ಮಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುದೇ ಮಹಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ವಂದೇ Shri Guru Shri Prabhupadam, Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Sakrajakam, Sahagandarupanatantatankam Sajinam, Sahagandarupanatantam Sahagandarupanatantam, Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanyadvaitam, Shri Radha Krishna Paramam, Sahagandarupanatantam Shri Vishakamatamascha, Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Name, Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Vacharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaptare Vacharine, Vanchakam Bhutalevyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanevyo Vishnuvyo Namo Namah, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasani Gaura Bhaktivinoda,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna.
Are you hearing? It's necessary because this is the class in the culture of hearing. So I hope everyone is able to hear at the back. You can all hear. There are two important words here, culture and hearing. Hearing, we all do. Everybody does. The animals do, the birds do, the humans do. Everybody does it. But hearing about what? What constitutes culture? Culture means a set of beliefs, practices, lifestyle, values that any given society cherishes. So what is it about hearing that we cherish that makes it really worthwhile? That's important. What kind of hearing? The principle that hearing is very important, everybody understands. Actually, if you ask anybody, which is the most important sense of the body? Many people would say probably the eyes. Yes, because we can see. It makes a lot of difference. But it may not always be so. For one who cannot hear, that person understands what the difference is. Because we have not experienced the difference between the two, not being able to see or not being able to hear. So we sometimes think probably seeing is more important. Undoubtedly seeing is important. But between the two, not being able to see and not being able to hear, which is a more serious affliction? That's the question. There was one American political activist called Helen Keller in the 20th century, and she was an author and so on. Now the interesting part about her is that she was both deaf and blind. And despite that, she achieved many things. And she said that having experienced both blindness as well as deafness, my conclusion is that lack of hearing is a greater affliction than the lack of seeing. Because hearing means you're in touch with sound. Sound is something that keeps everything alive. Even in the whole universe, sound is the beginning of everything. So in the beginning there was a word. So sound is so important. And the sound carries with it the tone, the voice, everything. You know, in China, the same thing means different things if it is spoken in a different tone. So if you say it in a high pitch, it means one thing. If you say it in a low pitch, the same sentence means another thing. The same word means another thing. So being in touch with sound means you're being in touch with something very vital. That said, we must point out that there are many devotees who are hearing challenged. In London recently, I delivered a lecture to a group of devotees or and aspiring devotees who are hearing challenge, they weren't able to hear. So now the devotee who was an instructor for the hearing impaired was speaking in sign language for them. And I was explaining to them how Krishna consciousness reaches out to the soul, that even if their gross body is not able to hear, their subtle body and the soul is hearing the holy name. And there is some churning process going on. Even though the brain is not able to analyze it and to break it down, the soul is understanding it. There are also many examples of great devotees who were blind. Surdas, who wrote so many nice songs and poems about Krishna. He lived in Vrindavan for most of his life in the Govardhan area. He was blind. And Bilwa Mangal Thakur became blind later. But he lived like that for many years in Vrindavan. And Krishna actually escorted him all the way to Vrindavan. Those of you who have been to Barsana, which is the place of Srimati Radharani, you will know that in one place, there is a place, in Barsana, there is a place called Mor Kutima. There is a beautiful painting there of Radharani and Krishna dancing with a peacock. And that painting was done by a blind sadhu who used to live there. So how did he see what he was painting? How did he understand the final details? Even when we see, most of us can't paint properly. But this devotee, even without seeing, was able to paint. Krishna was directing his hand, of course, and with his spiritual eyes he was seeing. So, as far as devotional service is concerned, even though there is no impairment, no impediment from any material standpoint for one's Krishna consciousness, still, for those of us who have these senses, we should feel so fortunate. I can hear. I can see. We take for granted something that is easily available to us. But when we are deprived of that, then we realize its value. So, our sense of hearing is so precious. And how are we using it? That's very important. So, generally, as far as ordinary subjects is concerned, we have no shortage of topics to speak of. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Shrota Vyadini Rajendra, Pranam Santi Sahasrasha, Apashyatamat Tattvam, Griheshu Gulamedinam. Shukadev Goswami says, my dear king, for the people in general, there are thousands of topics to hear about, to speak about in the material world. Such people do not have any idea of spiritual life, atma-tattva, neither are they interested in that. And therefore, they are not called grihasthas, they are called grihamedhis, whose intelligence and consciousness is always absorbed in materialistic affairs. They are never interested in any spiritual topic. So, the material world is no shortage. Wherever you go, people are going to be discussing something mundane, which is of no value to us. And because after all, we are coming from that world, so we carry forward the tendency with us. So even as devotees, we tend to relapse into materialistic talk many times. It's called prajalpa. And then we hear, we speak. So what kind of topics should we hear about? Naturally, we have to hear about Krishna. And because the goal of life is self-realization, is becoming Krishna conscious. Of all the processes of devotional service that Prahlad Maharaj has outlined, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc., the very first one and the most important one is Shravanam, which means to hear. indicating that hearing is the root of our spiritual life. It's the root of gaining knowledge, even in the material world. Have you ever wondered how a child learns a language? How did we learn any language when we were small? Yes, we did go to school and we did have classes, but nevertheless, we learned not because somebody taught us only on the blackboard. We learned simply by hearing. We just heard other people speaking. And it's not that the intelligence of the child is so developed, or that the child has such fantastic capacity that just hears one thing and remembers it always. No. But such is the process of hearing. That just by hearing, one begins to learn, one understands. So we see that in the case of children, we see that in material cases. How do we learn anything? We hear. We go to school, we go to college, we hear from the teachers. So we gain knowledge by hearing. So hearing is the root of everything. So similarly with Krishna consciousness, hearing is the most fundamental thing. And there is a certain set of verses. Of course, this topic of hearing and Krishna consciousness is very vast. There is so much about this topic in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita and the other scriptures. In two sessions, it is hardly possible to do justice to the topic. But nevertheless, we'll just try to select some of the more important themes. I'd like to select a set of verses from the first canto. Can we have the next? From the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second chapter, verses 17 through 21. We'll just recite these verses now. And remember, sometimes we think that we want to hear, we want to be entertained. Yes, as a speaker, I often have to restrain myself. Because on one hand, you want to engage the audience. And the best way to engage the audience is to tell them jokes and stories. So you know that you have your audience. But then there's the other side. You have to give substance. You have to give real philosophy. If you're going to just engage in entertainment, which is what many professional reciters do, then what is the use? We will not be going through the process of spiritual education. Srila Prabhupada wanted our temples and our communities to be places of spiritual education, serious education. So we should go through the philosophy, at least the basic things, and we should understand, we should develop a taste for hearing these topics. We should try to see that we don't fall asleep when a little bit of philosophy is discussed. And when a story is told, immediately we are sitting up and our attention gets revived. Additionally, it's also very nice to chant the verses, even though we may not understand the Sanskrit. But Srila Prabhupada one time famously said, just as when there is a rolling of thunder, then people in different lands get the message. There's one reaction in everybody's heart, regardless of what language they speak and what culture they come from. And that is a sense of fear. When you hear really loud, loud rumbling of thunder, clapping of thunder again and again, lightning, immediately there's fear. So just as thunder is understood by everybody, regardless of their background, similarly, because these verses, even though they are in Sanskrit, they are transcendental messages about Krishna and his pure devotees. Therefore, even if we don't understand the language, they will have an effect on our consciousness. So reciting and hearing these verses in Sanskrit also is important. It is even more beneficial if, in addition, we actually understand what we are reciting. So we should try to focus on both. So this series of verses, these four or five verses, will give us the benefits of hearing about Krishna. So let's, you can just recite after me these beautiful verses. Shrimatams katha Krishna.
Shrimatams katha Krishna.
Punya shravana kirtana.
Punya shravana kirtana.
Hridyam prastohya bhadrani.
Hridyam prastohya bhadrani.
Vidunoti surit satam.
Vidunoti surit satam.
Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the desire, the urge to hear his messages, which in themselves are virtues when properly heard and chanted. So when we hear Krishna Katha, which is in itself a very pious activity, even if not a devotee of the Lord, if you're just hearing Krishna Katha as a pious activity, still it will take, give you a lot of benefit. Imagine if you do it with devotion. So we see that the heart of the devotee is cleansed of material desires. So this is a sequence, a series of verses. The next one, please. Nashta prayeshu bhadreshu.
Nashta prayeshu bhadreshu.
Nityam bhagavata sevaya.
Nityam bhagavata sevaya.
Bhagavatyuttama shloke.
Bhagavatyuttama shloke.
Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki.
Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki.
By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So what happens when you regularly attend class and you hear? All that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed. All the material desires is destroyed. And loving service to the Lord is awakened. Bhakti bhavati. What kind of bhakti? Naishtiki. That which is resolute, irrevocable bhakti. That arises by the process of regularly hearing about Krishna. Next one, please. Tada rajastamo bhava.
Tada rajastamo bhava.
Kama lobha dayaschaye.
Kama lobha dayaschaye.
Cheta eterna vittam.
Cheta eterna vittam.
Sthitam sattve prasidati.
Sthitam sattve prasidati.
As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. So what happens when Naishtiki Bhakti dawns in the heart, that resolute bhakti? Then the modes of passion and ignorance and its symptoms like lust, greed and so on disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in pure goodness and becomes happy. Next. Evam prasanna manaso.
Evam prasanna manaso.
Bhagavat bhakti yogatah.
Bhagavat bhakti yogatah.
Bhagavat tattva vijnanam.
Bhagavat tattva vijnanam.
Sangasya jayate.
Mukta sangasya jayate.
Thus established in a mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. So, evam prasanna manaso, the mind becomes prasanna, becomes very joyful, very happy by the process of doing bhakti yoga. And bhagavat tattva vijnanam, the person learns and experiences the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. The word vijnanam indicates realized knowledge, not just book knowledge. And then the devotee becomes free from material association. And finally, next one. Vidyate hridayam grantes.
Vidyate hridayam grantes.
Chidyante sarva samshayah.
Chidyante sarva samshayah.
Kshiyante chasya karmani.
Kshiyante chasya karmani.
Drishtave vatmanishvare.
Drishtave vatmanishvare.
Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the Self as Master. So now all the misgivings are destroyed, meaning all the material misconceptions that I am the body, I am the enjoyer of this world, so on and so forth, everything goes away. And one understands who one is. One is the eternal servant of Krishna. So these series of verses are encapsulated in the form of a chart. Can we have the next slide? I think it's okay. It's easier to move. Yes. Okay, so pay a little attention and you'll see that this is a summary of the verses that we just discussed. First, you start by hearing about what? About Krishna or from Krishna, if you're fortunate enough. But there is no difference between the two. Even though you're hearing Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna, but by reading the Bhagavad Gita as it is, you're actually hearing from Krishna. So there's no difference. So you hear, then by hearing the devotees purified by Sri Krishna who's seated in the heart, then the devotee develops transcendental knowledge, engages in more hearing, then the devotee becomes fixed in devotional service, doesn't get so easily swayed, does not leave devotional service because of this problem or something else. Then the devotee becomes more advanced, becomes free from the modes of passion and ignorance. Then he becomes positively happy and blissful in Krishna consciousness, in pure goodness. Then the heart knot of material affection is cut and one is able to understand Krishna. One has understood the science of Krishna and one can understand Krishna. By which process? Just by hearing. Simply by hearing and more hearing and even more hearing. Again and again and again. The same theme is repeated by Srila Prabhupada. Can we have the next one in the purport? Text 6.35 in the Bhagavad Gita, which is Chanchalam Bhimana Krishna Pramati Balavadradham Tasyaham Nagram Manni Vayuriva Sudushkaram. In the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken about Ashtanga Yoga, the Eightfold System of Yoga, to Arjuna. And Arjuna says, impossible. He is speaking about controlling the mind. It's just not possible. I cannot do it. It's impossible because the mind is not possible to control. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how the mind is mad. Yes? What does a mad person do? A mad person, there's no saying what he will do. He does one thing now, does another thing later, he does all sorts of crazy things. That's why we call the person mad. Even what's against his interest, he does it. He will sometimes bang his head on the wall, He will do things which are self-destructive. Yes, that's the nature of a mad person. So the mind is like that. The mind is mad because it makes us do things that are completely against our self-interest. So there is a way to tame the mad mind. And Srila Prabhupada says, that's hearing. Hearing about Krishna. Then the misgivings are destroyed. The sequence is similar to the one there. Prabhupada has drawn from that same series of verses. And then more enlightenment, and one develops the vairagya, which is detachment from matter, and simultaneously it means attachment to spirit or to Sri Krishna. And then one gains tremendous spiritual satisfaction. And Prabhupada says in the purport there, it is called Paresha Anubhava. Para Isha Anubhava. There is a beautiful verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Paresha Anubhava Virakti Anyatra Chaishatrika Eka Kala Pratyamanasa Yathashnathasyum Tushti Pushti Kshudapayo Mukhasam. The meaning of this verse is that the process of surrendering to Krishna and the development of bhakti is like the process of eating. Now, what happens when we eat? With every morsel of food that we put into the mouth, there are three things that happen. Tushti, we start getting some nourishment from the body. We start feeling satisfaction. Pushti, which we start getting some nourishment. And Krud Apayaha, which means our hunger, but yes, a hungry man is an angry man, different thing. But our hunger starts getting satiated. Now, do these three things happen one after the other? Is it that first you feel some satisfaction, then you start getting nourished, and then your hunger starts reducing? No, the three happen together. Trika ek kalaha, which means these three things happen simultaneously, progressively, step by step, step by step, it goes on. So similarly, prapadyamanasya, for one who is surrendered to Krishna, three things happen simultaneously that develop in that devotee's consciousness. One is called bhakti. One develops love for the Lord. Second, para isha anubhava, which is what Prabhupada is speaking about here, which means one derives spiritual satisfaction and happiness in that. And ultimately he says, virakti, which means detachment or renunciation from all things unconnected with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a doctor and a patient. A doctor prescribes an expert treatment by giving some medicines and also gives some don'ts and also talks about a diet. So Prabhupada says the diet for those who want to perfect their lives is Krishna Prasadam, and the expert treatment is hearing about Krishna. So by the combination of expert hearing about hearing about Krishna and taking Krishna Prasadam only, nothing else, one can control the mad mind, the crazy mind. And we have experience with the crazy mind at every moment. So, in other words, what I want to say here is, there are innumerable verses which we can cite and instances that repeat the same thing, but I think the point has been made. Now, this was formerly done as a routine. It was part of the regular culture in the olden days. And actually, you see, this was cutting across all religious faiths even. Everybody would gather at the religious place of worship. They would read from their scriptures, somebody would hear, the others would hear. In India we see, even till today, there are many villages where the villagers every evening get together in the local temple and they'll have some learned person coming and speaking from the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, or the Bhagavatam. And that goes on every single day. It's a part of the culture, it's their habit. Of course, in the ashrams and the sages, they'll do that all day, morning and evening. Chanakya, when he speaks about the duties of kings, when he speaks about the schedule, the timetable of a king, very surprisingly, he mentions that a king must spend at least 4 hours a day on religious activities, including hearing from learned people, from brahmanas and devotees. And this was the culture. Whether one is rich or poor, whether one is a king or a common citizen, whatever varna, whatever ashrama, whatever we had, we would participate in that culture of hearing regularly. Therefore we see when Yudhishthira Maharaj was in the forest with his brothers in exile, they were accompanied by many, many brahmanas, and occasionally they would have other sages who would come to visit them. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was always wrapped in attention, hearing from these sages and brahmanas. He wanted to take advantage of the opportunity. And he would ask so many questions to them, and they would elaborate, give long answers, and they had no hurry. No, they didn't have to go to work and all that. So they would sit all day and just hear. Yudhishthira Maharaj was overjoyed doing that. He's a great devotee, Yudhishthira Maharaj. So are the other Pandavas. But the other Pandavas, because they were very strongly in the Kshatriya mood, Bhima and Arjuna especially were gnashing their teeth. And Draupadi also was berating Yudhishthira, you just want to sit in here and there, our kingdom has been taken away. And Bhima was saying, we'll go and kill just now all the Kauravas. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj would pacify them, come, sit here. And we can't do anything that is against dharma. When the time comes, everything will happen. So come, sit down and hear. And even when sages like Markandeya Rishi came, Krishna was personally present there. And Krishna himself participated in the hearing process. He also sent them to hear. Krishna also sets the example. When Lord Ram also was hearing the Ramayana, he heard that Lav and Kush, he didn't know at that time that they were his sons, that these two young boys are reciting very melodiously the Ramayana. He was fascinated. And these boys came and performed before him in the court. And he was so wrapped in attention, he didn't even realize he was sitting on his throne. And then he got down, he sat lower and lower to get closer to the boys. It was narration about himself. We can't imitate that. We can't say somebody should speak about us and then we relish it so much. That is false ego. When somebody speaks about us, favor and nicely and praising us, we should know that is like poison to our minds. We should be very keen to hear our own praise. Sometimes devotees may offer a word of encouragement and praise genuinely, and then we should accept that as some encouragement, but not that we should get proud, and we shouldn't get too serious about believing what they are saying. So, hearing about Krishna, hearing about the Lord, about the Shastra, scripture, is very much ingrained in the Vedic culture. It's very much part. Even the children used to engage in that practice. So this is how the culture of hearing in those days was so strong. So we should also try to develop this culture, because the success of our life depends on this one single thing. Now, the Shastras do say that of the 9 processes, chanting is the most important, kirtanam. Yes, certainly. In other places, Prabhupada says, hearing is the most important. Both are the most important. But the fact is that unless you hear, you will not chant. We all began chanting because we heard somebody asking us to chant. or we heard somebody chanting. If we hadn't heard, we wouldn't have started chanting. So it is so important for us in our devotee society to develop this culture of hearing Krishna Katha in a very serious way, not just in a casual way. And I often joke that even if you're feeling sleepy, still come. Because in every class, there's always some devotees who sleep. Am I right? At least for some time. But as I joke, I said, if you look at their faces, even though they're sleeping, they look so blissful. It's because they're hearing Krishna Katha. So they're smiling. But if you go into the tube or you go into public transport and you see people are sleeping, you know, and they're going to work, they're morose because they have to go to work, and they're exhausted when they come back. So either way, they're nodding off to sleep, falling on each other's shoulders, and they look very glum. So when they're asleep, they look happy. But when they sleep in class, they look very happy also. But that doesn't mean that we should do that. We should be awake. If by sleeping they can be so blissful, you can imagine how blissful they will be when they are awake. And when they hear it with attention. So that is the benefit. So many times we see that in many temples, this one thing is not given the priority by devotees. The temple gives it a priority because these are the programs that are going on as per Prabhupada's instructions. So they happen in regular course. So devotees, they may come, and I have seen many places when they come, they don't attend the class. They socialize outside the class. Have you seen that happening? The class is going on inside, but the socializing is going on outside. But nothing is so important that it has to be discussed when the class is discussed. Unless there is some very urgent matter, some urgent devotional service to be done. For example, there may be some pujaris who have to cook at that time, or to offer arati to the deities at that time, so it's understandable. Or like today, for example, in order that all of us may hear and speak peacefully, some of the children have been taken away and engaged in a Krishna conscious way. So some devotees have to be engaged in doing that. So they miss the class. But unless it's something like that, we should try to avoid missing the class. And especially when we come, we should attend. And attend with attention. So let's try to see. Can we have the next verse there? Yeah, let's try to hear from the Bhagavad Mahatmya. I think I may have discussed this briefly 2 years ago when I came here to Melbourne. But many of you were not there in that class maybe. And in any case, those of you who were there may have forgotten it. So let's repeat that. This is from the Bhagavad Mahatmya. He says there are basically two types of listeners of the Srimad Bhagavatam or of Krishna Katha. They are superior types and inferior. Now, where do we fall in? That is for us to judge. Okay? So you make your own judgment in your own mind. Now, it may be that we are sometimes superior, sometimes inferior. So judge from this. Let's consider the superior listeners one after the other. The chirp of a bird. Have you heard of the Chapaka bird? It's a celebrated bird in Sanskrit literature. It's a bird, legendary, who doesn't drink any water, even though it may be standing next to a lake. It doesn't drink any water except rainwater. So it stands up with its mouth open, waiting for the rain to fall. Then it drinks that water. So similarly, a devotee who has many subject matters to hear about if he or she wants to, but focuses only on Krishna, Krishna topics of Krishna consciousness, In other words, doesn't hear about anything else apart from Krishna consciousness. That's the only thing that he or she hears about. So that kind of devotee is called a superior listener, who doesn't want to hear anything else apart from Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so on. The next is the swan. The swan or the hansa is also a legendary, celebrated bird in Sanskrit literature. It apparently has the mystical ability to separate milk from a mixture of milk and water. And that's something amazing. Now, similarly, a devotee hears material things, spiritual things, so many things, because in the course of our day-to-day life, we have to hear so many things. So, the devotee who is like a swan is one who only selects those topics from amongst all of these that are worthy of listening. And even if there is some materialistic topic, apparently there is something that is useful for Krishna consciousness, the person may take something from that. For example, Srila Prabhupada used to sometimes cite the verses of Chanakya, the moralist. Chanakya is not known as a great devotee. He was a devotee of sorts, but primarily he was a statesman, an advisor to statesmen and kings, an economist, a political scientist, call it what you know in modern language. But because those things are useful for us to know, some of those things Prabhupada took it. So a swan is like that, picks up those things that are connected to Krishna and utilizes them for hearing. The next is the parrot. The parrot, you know that many people keep pet parrots at home. Although generally I'm not so happy with the idea because you keep the parrot caged. That's not a nice thing to do. What if somebody were to keep us in a cage? How would we feel? Right? So, in the cage, the parrot hears everything that's spoken in that room, remembers it, and repeats it. The parrot generally doesn't understand what it's saying, but repeats. And that is the nature of a parrot. So a devotee who is like a parrot is one who hears very attentively Krishna Katha and then goes back to others and at every opportunity repeats exactly what he or she has heard to others. This is a good thing actually. Not in the sense that it is blindly repeated, but it is repeated with some faith and understanding. So that is the example of the parrot. Then there is the example of the fish. The fish here specifically, before we go to the fish, we are talking of parrots, it just reminds me of a little story. I'm succumbing to my temptation. Although I started to resolve that I'll try to avoid stories, I'll tell you a little story anyway. So, I told this in England some weeks ago. So one time there was a group of sadhus who were traveling from one ashram to another ashram which was far away, where some of their friends lived. They wanted to visit them. They hadn't met them for a long time. So they had to go through a very dense forest on the way. So it was getting dark, so they felt it was dangerous to move in the forest in the dark. So they were looking for some shelter. So they found a little hut and they entered that hut and thought maybe we can take shelter here. Apparently it must have been owned by some hunter who must have gone out for hunting. So it was empty, but as soon as they entered the hut, they heard all sorts of swear words and foul language, and they were shocked. My word, they shut their ears. who was speaking such foul language here? And it was going on and on and on. And they went inside and saw it was a parrot in a cage. This parrot was speaking all sorts of foul language. And they said, my God, we cannot stay in this room for one moment. Then somebody said, but if we go out, there could be wild animals and they may attack us and kill us. So the wisest among them said, doesn't matter, better to die in the jungle than to live this night here, hearing this all night long. Excuse me. In between, I should drink some water. I heard carefully and I followed. So hearing, following. So they said, we can't stay here for even one moment. So then they left. And they fortunately somehow, they were not attacked by any wild animals. So they reached the ashram of their friends. And as soon as they entered there, they again heard some nice melodious chanting of the Sanskrit verses and some songs about Krishna being sung. And they entered the ashram to find it was a parrot who was in a cage, who was singing. Maybe he was in a cage or maybe not, I don't know, but it was a parrot. So they were so happy. And they were just sitting there and relishing the Krishna Katha and the melodious singing of the parrot. And then their friends came in, they welcomed them and said, look, before we give you any other news, we have an important question to ask. Please resolve this mystery of these two birds. The one bird we had there was using swear words, and this one here is just the opposite. So the sadhus there, they smiled and said, actually, these two birds, parrots, were twins. And what happened was that the hunter captured one of them. And that parrot grew up with the hunter. The other one flew away and somehow came to our ashram here. And this parrot likes to be with us. Since we are chanting about Krishna and chanting mantras and everything, so this parrot has learnt it. Whereas because the hunter there is only using foul language, so the parrot has learned that. So depending on what we hear, we also speak accordingly, isn't it? So if you're hearing about Krishna, you will speak about Krishna. That is why in Shravanam, Kirtanam Vishnu Swaranam, Shravanam comes before Kirtanam. Before you, if you want to perfect Kirtanam, which is a Yuga Dharma, you have to do Shravanam. Because when there is sufficient hearing, then there will be sufficient speaking or kirtan. So the power of association is very important, and the power of what you hear. So be careful of what you hear as much as you can manage. Of course, we can't be like that monkey we learnt about in our school, which shuts its eyes, doesn't want to see anything bad, shuts the ears not to hear anything bad. As now doesn't want to speak anything bad. At least we try as much as possible to be like that. We can't always be. But we should try to see that our hearing is as pure as possible. And it's a good idea to repeat it. Otherwise you tend to forget it. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. So whatever you hear, if you go and repeat it to your family or your friends or those living in the ashram or anyone, then you start remembering it. Many devotees ask, you know, we read, we hear, but we forget very quickly. How many of you have this problem? Yes, everybody has this problem. We hear it once, we forget. That is the nature of Kali Yuga. So what is the remedy for that? The remedy for that is to keep on hearing. And then keep on repeating to others, and then you will remember. So So when the Shravanam Kirtanam is done again and again and again, then the Smaranam comes up. The memory, one is able to remember what one has read. So anyway, that is the third type of listener, the parrot. Then there is the fish. The fish, especially it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Mahatmya, this is a fish in the ocean of condensed milk. There are such oceans in the higher planets. And this fish gently keeps drinking the condensed milk as it swims through the ocean, but the eyes are always open without blinking. So similarly, a listener, devotee listener who's like the fish, sits in the discourse of class. Attentive. What's the opposite? Someone who looks very distracted, looks here, looks there, looks at the watch, and of course the all-time favorite looks at the cell phone, and looking here and there. So the fish, fixed. Just there is only one focus, there is Krishna Katha going on, no here and there business. So these are the four types of superior listeners. Then the four types of inferior listeners. The wolf. You know, in the forest, there are all sorts of animals. There are deer. The deer, as you may know, they love music. Especially flutes and such melodious instruments. And that's the way the hunters capture them. The hunter will learn to play the flute, and he sits in one place and plays a melodious tune, and the deers get mesmerized, as if intoxicated and under a spell. They just come close to the hunter. And the moment the hunter stops, it's as if the spell has been broken, and they realize, oh, some human here, and they run away. Deer, by nature, are very fearful animals. At the slightest movement, they're afraid. If you notice, if you've seen any wildlife documentaries in your school days or something, you'll see how animals are grazing in the forest, looking here and there, looking here and there. They're always looking for someone, a predator, who may attack them. So deer are always very fearful. But when the person plays the flute, they forget that fear. You just go. When the flute playing stops, they run away. Actually, the playing of the flute of Krishna and Vrindavan is another topic in itself. Now, if an ordinary person playing the flute has this result on a deer, can you imagine what would happen to people who heard Krishna's flute? They would go mad in a Krishna conscious way. They were intoxicated with Krishna praying. The deer, the peacocks, the cows, and chapter 21 of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Vena Geet, the song of the flute. That describes the effect that Krishna's flute has on different people, different entities, even the trees, the clouds, everybody, the demigods. Shiva is playing as he stops. Indra is stunned, starts crying. And Brahma is in his meditation. For four Kumaras, the meditation is broken. They hear Krishna's flute. So the messages of Krishna are also like Krishna's flute. In the absolute sense, there is no difference. So in any case, these deer, they like the sound of the flute. But the wolf, very troublesome creature. It makes very unpleasant noises all the time in the forest. So when the wolf makes some noises, then the deer, which is sitting there quietly relishing the sound of a flute played somewhere, it immediately breaks free of that spell and then again runs away because of fear. So similarly, like Krishna Katha is like some nectar. It's like that flute song that the deer is hearing. And the attentive listeners of those are like the deer who are relishing the Krishna Katha. But there will be some listeners who are like the wolf. it creates a disturbance sitting in the crowd. Yes? And what is the biggest disturbance? The cell phone ringing. And especially with some musical noise or something. Yes? I cite this joke often, that when I was in Vrindavan, I was giving a lecture, and I had been somewhat, shall we say, frustrated with mobile phones ringing in classes. So when I gave class, I thought, let me take control of the situation. So I made an announcement before the class. I said that here is an announcement. Please switch off your mobile phones. And if any of your mobile phones ring in the class, you will have to pay a 500 rupee fine. And our goshala is running short of money. We are having a bit of a crisis in the goshala. So we will have this devotee sitting here, because I know some of your phones are going to ring. And he's sitting here to collect the 500 rupees, which I'm going to collect on the spot before the lecture is over. And so I started the lecture knowing full well, fully well. And indeed, my convictions were borne out. Somebody started ringing phone, oh, 500 rupees. So we made a good amount of donation. So the point is, it's a disturbance. Another kind of disturbance is somebody who yawns loudly, making a sound. You know, you see that in India often, sitting there and just casually and they yawn loudly, making noise. Or sometimes, even if they don't make a noise, they're yawning. Even if you yawn in public, you're supposed to cover your mouth, you know. You're not supposed to just go for it. So, anyway, they yawn. Or they may be just generally commenting, making comments, or talking to somebody else, or generally in some way creating some disturbance in the class, which distracts the speaker and distracts the audience. Many times it's also children who create something. Of course, they are blameless, they are innocent. But we must train our children to start hearing. The culture of hearing must be ingrained in them from hearing, so that they relish it, they understand it. And for those who are even younger, perhaps then you have classes like we have parallelly going on, so they don't cause a disturbance. There may be many creative ways of disturbing a class. And there are people who do, you know, try to experiment, maybe sometimes unknowingly. So anyway, we should not try to be like the wolf. The next is the Burunda bird. The analogy here is that the Burunda bird is supposed to go and speak to everybody, give some messages, but doesn't follow himself. So a listener who comes to a class and hears something and goes and instructs others in the class, this is what was mentioned, we should do this, but he himself doesn't do it. So that's like the Burunda bird, you know, the inferior category of listener. The third is the bull. The bull actually doesn't distinguish between sweet grapes and oil cakes. You know oil cake? There are oil seeds. You know where you get your cooking oil from? The cooking oil comes from the crushing of seeds, generally. So the seeds are crushed and the oil comes out. What remains behind is called the oil cake. So that oil cake is supposed to be very nutritious for cows and bulls, but it's not very tasty. So the cows and bulls are fed this. So a bull may be given sweet grapes and also oil cake. You can't distinguish between the two. We'll take this or we'll take that. This is the nature of the bull. It doesn't have discrimination. Oh, this is something nice and sweet. Sweet grapes, let me taste that. But he may go for the oil cake. So similarly, a devotee, or maybe an aspiring devotee, or anyone who's not a devotee perhaps, doesn't have a sense of discrimination of where to hear from. any spiritual, you know, program, you know, from any sort of philosophy, any sort of speaker, he goes and listens, thinks, yes, because it's spiritual, I should go. Without considering what is the philosophy, what are their teachings, are they devotees of the Lord, are they impersonalists, are they, what kind of philosophy are they following? There's no sense of discrimination. Many times, devotees also who are new, they hear some other charismatic speaker who is very popular or famous and has a large following. And they say, you know, I heard that and he's saying exactly what we say. But it's not like that. It may superficially just seem to be like that. But just scratch the surface and you see something quite different. There's a completely different philosophy. I remember I give this example again from my own experience. Many years ago, as a new brahmachari, there were some people, I remember, who were trying to pressurize me to come and meet a particular saintly person who was quite popular with a certain community, group of people. And so I said, well, I was kind of resisting for some time. Finally, I agreed. I went and I met that person briefly and came over just to satisfy him. They gave me his cassette. So I heard his cassette. In those days, we had these tape recorders, these little things with a little cassette. So I heard that, and he was talking only about Krishna. It was 30 minutes on one side, 30 minutes on the reverse. And he was singing songs of Krishna, devotion to Krishna, everything. And I was thinking, actually, maybe I've been a little too harsh on this person. Because he's speaking about Krishna, everything. What's wrong with what he's saying? And then I came to the end of the other 30 minutes. And somewhere towards the end, he spoke some, just one sentence about merging with the cosmic oneness. That was it. The off button. And then I said, yes. Now I'm satisfied that my conclusion earlier had been correct. So it may sound, officially speaking, about Krishna. What was his conclusion? He was an impersonalist. He was advocating we have to merge into God. We have to become God. So they may adopt all these techniques or the philosophy. They may speak the pastimes of Krishna even. But what is their ultimate conclusion? The conclusion is impersonalist or voidist, etc. One time one devotee was singing the Maha Mantra very melodiously and I asked him, where did you learn this melody from? Such a nice melody. So he was hesitant to tell me, he was feeling embarrassed. I said, no, tell me, it's nice. He said, you know, before I came to ISKCON, I used to go to such and such organization, he named that organization, which is a Mayavadi organization. They don't believe in the personality of God. They believe that the absolute truth is impersonal, that we are God and we should merge into the impersonal and all of that. So he said, I used to go there and there was this Swamiji who was there and he used to sing what? Maha Mantra. I said, yes. He would sing the Maha Mantra. And he was a good musician. He would sing with this tune. So I remember it from those days. So I said, fine, now you have really Krishnized this tune and brought it here. So anyway, many people may take portions of Bhakti Yoga and use it to embellish their own philosophy. So we should be careful of who we are hearing from. We shouldn't jump to conclusions that superficially because something seems okay, it's fine, it's here. We must have the discrimination and not be like the bull. But that said, I can't resist it, sorry, another story of a bull. But it's the real story that came in the newspapers in India. Okay, alright. It came in a newspaper in India that there was a Bhagavad Saptah in Orissa, in the state of Orissa. And a small little marquee, a pandal, was set up. And it was for a couple of hours in the morning, a couple of hours in the evening. Then people used to come in at a set time, they would sit down, and the speaker would start. Now there was a bull who came in all of a sudden. Now you can imagine what happens. Imagine if a bull were to walk in here. What would happen? I'm sure none of us would remain seated. All of us would get up in a hurry. So then all the people started to shoo away the bull. But the bull, being bull-headed, was determined to stay there. So he plonked himself there on the ground. He decided he wanted to hear the katha. He had firm determination. He sat there. So then everybody decided, might as well let him sit. And he's not creating a nuisance. So he sat. And quietly hearing everything, with good attention, some of the other listeners, the humans, were falling asleep and being like these other, like the wolf and the bull, all of that. But this bull, for the word bull is maligned here, but anyway. So he was listening carefully, he wasn't sleeping. And then when the katha got over, he went away. The afternoon session, again he came back, exactly the same time. Heard it till the end, walked away. And the astonishing thing is he again came the next day, same time, went away, came back in the afternoon, went away, did this for 7 days. And it became headline news with newspaper pictures and everything like that. So we can be like that bull, but not like this bull here. That bull's listening was good. Then next we have the camel. The camel also sometimes gives up sweet mango leaves to chew on bitter neem leaves. Even mango leaves are offered, it rejects that and takes up bitter neem leaves. So the camel listener is like a person who, when offered an opportunity to hear about Krishna, gives up that opportunity, would rather go and hear some material talk or some discussion somewhere else. So we don't want to be like that. So these are the two types of listeners, superior and inferior. Can we just have the next slide? Again, there's another categorization. Two types of listeners and reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who desire Sri Krishna and those who desire material prosperity. And by the way, before we go on, just another thing reminds me of causing disturbance is when people suddenly get up in the middle of the class and walk out. It's a crowded class. In England it became such a thing that one speaker actually halted the person and said, look, anything wrong with what I said? Because he got upset. You know, it's okay if the lecturer has gone on for too long and it's so late and you have to go to work or something. But just 5 minutes into the lecture, 10 minutes into the lecture. And he was sitting right in front of the speaker, up and out. So this is such a habit, actually, I just say, we have to say this, that no, you're not supposed to go out like that. Just have some patience. If you have to leave early for some reason, sit at the corner near the door so you can slip out without causing any disturbance. Because the moment somebody gets up to walk out, then everybody has to look at him or her. And then everyone's attention is diverted, including that of the speaker. One sannyasi was who had taken the devotees on a trip on the River Thames in London on a boat ride, and they had katha and kirtan. And in the katha he said, this is the only lecture in which no one has got up and walked away. Because they would have to jump into the river. So maybe it's a good idea to have lectures in the middle of a place where no one can go out at the same time. You come of your own free will, but once you're there, then no whimsical coming, going, whenever we like, just doing whatever we like. That discipline must be there. The respect for Srimad Bhagavatam must be there. Okay, so coming back to the two types of listeners and reciters. There are those listeners and reciters who only want Krishna. They want pure devotional service. There are those who come to hear about Krishna because they want something material from Krishna, prosperity, something, some kind of material desire to fulfill. So then there is a question of compatible and incompatible listeners and reciters. So if there's a listener who doesn't desire Krishna, and the speaker is one who desires material prosperity, there is an incompatible combination. Both will be frustrated. The listener thinks, my God, you give me so many things. We do this, we get money, you worship Krishna like that, you'll get so much money. I don't want to hear all of that. And the speaker is thinking, I'm giving so much and this person is not interested. So incompatible. On the other hand, if the speaker is speaking pure devotional service, but the listener wants something material, the listener feels frustrated. What is this pure devotion all the time? I want to get some tips on how to make money. And there's nothing that is being told here on that. So compatible combination of listener and speaker is when the listener and the speaker both desire only Krishna, or when the listener and desires want material prosperity from their katha. But then that is an inferior grade of katha. So we don't have to worry about that. We should try to be in the first category. So anyway, we'll stop here for today and reflect on which of these categories we are from. We'll continue the discussion tomorrow in the evening. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. Thank you for being excellent audience in the superior category. Nobody belonged to the inferior category.
Thank you, everyone. Now, may I please request that everyone should exit from the back door? We don't want to create a noise for the neighbors. And also, if I could request some devotees, we would want to clean the room as early as possible. We have to vacate the facilities before 9 p.m. So we've got about 25 minutes. The more hands we have, the earlier and cleaner it will be. So if I could just have a quick show of hands, who's going to stay back, clean up? Okay. Very good. So all of you can stay back, and everybody else, please kindly make your way through this door. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Tomorrow would be the same time and at the same time. Another important announcement to make, I'll just get Gaurav Kumar Prabhu to pass on the message. Stay with us.